Hello, Sun's House listeners. This is Andy Bomick, which means once again it's time for the Children's Story Hour. And as always, I'm glad you could join me today for a good variety of children's stories. Like always, the first half hour I'll be reading picture books, and then the second half hour I'm going to continue with a novel that I've been reading now for about a couple months, titled Angus Thongs and Full Frontal Snogging: Confessions of Georgia Nicholson. But first, so let's begin today's program with the picture book titles. I'm going to start off with a book titled Red Knit Cap Girl and The Reading Tree. And then it's The Lost Property Office, Dear Muslim Child, Swashbee and the Sea, Princess Arabella Goes to School, and if we have time, we'll finish up the first half hour with Rock What You Got. So, it should be a lot of fun. Let's get started with our first picture book today, titled Red Knit Cap Girl and the Reading Tree. It is too hot to run and too hot to play. Red Knit Cap Girl and White Bunny find a shady spot and read. Squirrel wants to show them something, but he won't tell them what. You'll see when we get there, is all he will say. Red Knit Cap Girl and White Bunny scamper after Squirrel. What a big oak tree, Red Knit Cap Girl says when Squirrel points. Not the tree, Squirrel says, look inside. Red Knit Cap Girl looks inside the hole in the trunk. That's what I wanted to show you all, Squirrel says. It's called a nook. What is it for? Says Bear. Red Knit Cap Girl listens to the leaves rustling and feels the soft grass under her feet. She looks again at the nook. I have an idea, she says. Red Knit Cap Girl puts her book inside, where it will stay safe and dry. I will keep my book in this nook so everyone can read it, Red Knit Cap Girl says. I will keep my book in this nook so everyone can read mine too, White Bunny says. I will too, says Squirrel. Great idea, Bear cheers. Hedgehog is too excited to speak. He just squeaks, eek, eek. The birds swoop down. We have something to share, too. I don't have a book, Beaver says sadly. He wants to share something. Then Beaver gets an idea. He gnaws and hauls with his teeth and thumps with his tail until he's built a strong bookshelf. Everyone admires it. The next day, Deer brings his book to the nook. Duck follows with her book. Turtle has so many books to share that she carries them on her back. Sly Fox doesn't help. She sneaks to the nook when she thinks no one is looking. How silly they are, leaving all these books here for me to steal, she says as she takes one. The other animals bring more books to the nook. They read every day until the air turns clear and crisp and cold. It is autumn now, too cold to sit still around the nook. Snuggle under these, the sheep say. They've made warm wool blankets for everyone. Then the nook is even cozier. All summer, all fall, Owl and Moon have been watching Red Knit Cap Girl and her friends. Now it is almost winter. Days are shorter and dark comes earlier. Owl and Moon talk in hushed voices about what Red Knit Cap Girl and her friends have done. We can help too, Moon says, and she tells Owl how. They work all night long. In the morning, Red Knit Cap Girl and her friends see what Owl has made for them. Red Knit Cap Girl reads the sign out loud. "Library," she says. "A library is a place where anyone can borrow a book." Red Knit Cap Girl winks at Sly Fox, who smiles shyly back. That night, Moon shines her light on the nook, and her friends read. Sly Fox returns the book she took, and Red Knit Cap Girl reads it out loud to everyone. "Thank you, Red Knit Cap Girl," say the little ones who can't read yet. "Thank you, deer, bear, birds, duck, squirrel, hedgehog, beaver, sheep, turtle, and turtle babies. Sly Fox, Owl, White Bunny, and Moon. Thank you for making our library," says Red Knit Cap Girl. "It is good to share books." Lost Property Office. The station is very busy. Mummy holds my hand very tightly, and I hold on to Teddy's hand tightly too. We're taking a train to Grandpa's house. The train makes lots of stops. Some people get off, and then even more people get on. I wonder where everyone is going. Suddenly, Mummy says, "This is our stop." We rush off the train. The doors slam shut behind us. We're standing on the platform when I realize I don't have Teddy. The whistle blows. Mummy and I watch as the train leaves the station with Teddy still on it. "Don't worry," says Mummy. "We'll get Teddy back." At Grandpa's house, I feel very sad without Teddy. Grandpa finds one of Mummy's old toy bears for me to cuddle. But it's not the same. That night, when I fall asleep, I dream about Teddy. In my dream, he takes me to a special place. It's a sort of magical room where all the lost things go. It is full of all kinds of things that people have forgotten or left behind. Inside, I find all the things I have ever lost. There is my favorite orange jacket, which I left on the bus, a giant beach ball that floated out to sea, a special purple hair clip, my superhero lunchbox, a long overdue library book, one stripy sock, one spotty sock, and one long flowery sock, and Teddy. In the morning, I tell Grandpa all about my dream. "Well, you've given me an idea," he says. "I think I know where we might find your Teddy." Grandpa and I take the train back to the busy station. Grandpa holds my hand very tightly, and I hold on tightly too. We walk out of the station, down the road, and round the corner. "Ah, here it is," says Grandpa. I look up and read the sign above the door. Lost Property Office. Inside, Grandpa and I join a queue of people who have also lost things. A man has lost his umbrella, a lady has lost her keys, and a little boy has lost his bike. Finally, Grandpa and I get to the desk. "I've lost my Teddy," I say. "A teddy bear? Well, we have a lot of those," says the lady. "You'd better come with me." I follow her down a long corridor and into a room. The room is filled with shelves, from the floor all the way up to the ceiling. On each shelf, there is row upon row of lost things, just like in my dream. We go past all the umbrellas, all the glasses, all the hats, and all the keys. Past all the bags and balls and rows of books, past a violin, a clown puppet, a toy dinosaur, some false teeth, a hose pipe, a sparkly party dress, a bird mask, and all sorts of strange and wonderful objects, each one belonging to somebody, each one left behind somewhere. Finally, we get to the shelf full of teddy bears. There are big yellow ones, small pink ones, old ones, new ones, fluffy ones, and ugly ones. And then, high up on a shelf, I see Teddy. The lady reaches up and hands Teddy to me. I give Teddy a big hug and say thank you to the lady. We go back through the busy station. I hold Grandpa's hand very tightly, and I hold on to Teddy tightly too, all the way home. Dear Muslim Child, Dear Muslim Child, did you know that your birth was meant to be? Before Allah spoke the universe into existence, He wrote and nestled your name between ours. Then the earth slowly turned until the chosen hour of your birth. Dear Muslim child, can I tell you about Islam? Islam is rooted in peace. So live in peace, inspire peace, and invite peace into your life. Dear Muslim child, do you know the meaning of Nur? Nur means light. Allah is light upon light. Keep walking toward that light. Dear Muslim child, do you know how special your name is? You see, names are like vessels. They hold the essence of their meaning, chosen with care and precision. Precious are the names inspired by the legacies of our ancestors. Each time a name is spoken, it's an honoring of that gift. Dear Muslim child, do you know the power of words? Words can make you feel loved and cherished, but words can also be used as sticks and stones. Their weight can hurt your soul. But remember, to purify your heart each time you wash your face. As the water drips from your limbs, let go of any hurt and resentment. Fill yourself with hope, forgiveness, and resilience. Fortify yourself in the remembrance of Allah. Dear Muslim child, do you hear the adhan deep inside? Let it reverberate from your soul to your feet. Pray in public as you would at home. Perform your salat without feeling shy. Be graceful and let each movement bring you comfort. And when you pray with others, let your ears embrace the echo of the collective Amin, reminding you that you are not alone, but part of a whole. Let that feeling sustain you until the next prayer. Dear Muslim child, shall I tell you about the beauty of the hijab? Hijab is a state of the heart. More than a garment adorning those who chose it, it's a deep and personal connection, an expression of faith and devotion. Dear Muslim child, you are not alone. As your ancestors, elders, parents, teachers, and friends, we want the world to know. Your life matters. Your faith matters. Your story matters. So walk this earth remembering your purpose. You are exactly who you need to be. Swashby and the Sea. Captain Swashby loved the sea. The sea and he had been friends for a long, long time. She knew him in and out, up and down, and better than anyone. So when Swashby retired, it was to a small house on a small beach as close to the sea as he could be. Whenever he needed something, the sea provided exactly the right thing at exactly the right time. Life was just the way Swashby liked it, salty and sandy and serene, until squeaks and squeals sprang from the empty house next door, which was no longer empty. It had been commandeered by a girl and her granny, who planted umbrellas, scattered beach chairs, and boarded Swashby's deck without permission. Swashby battered down the hatches, hid when the doorbell rang, and fed their oatmeal cookies to the gulls. He didn't need neighbors. He didn't want neighbors. Neighbors were nosy, a nuisance, annoying. So, in return, he left a message written clearly in the sand. No trespassing, which the sea fiddled with just a little bit. Sing, the girl read. So that's all that's left after the tide. And did just that. She sang every song she knew while dancing up and down Swashby's deck. What now? She asked.
Now vanish,
Swashby wrote later that evening, adding a starfish exclamation point. And the sea fiddled just a little. W-I-S-H, the girl read, picking up the starfish, and did just that. She closed her eyes and began, I wish...
No, no,
Swashby interrupted, stomping down the steps.
If ye mean to make a starfish wish, ye must say this. Starfish back to wave so blue. The sea will see a wish come true.
How lovely, Granny said. We wish you'd come for a cup of tea, Mr. Swashby. But Swashby wished to be left alone. So he grumbled and mumbled and hurried inside. He didn't need tea. He didn't want tea. Tea was civilized, friendly, neighborly. What he needed was a new message. Please go away, he wrote firmly in the sand. And once again, the sea fiddled just a little. P-L-A-Y, the girl sounded out and did just that. With Swashby's shells and stones, with his buckets and shovels. But her towers kept falling.
Barnacle bottoms, Swashby muttered, marching out. You're doing it all wrong. Ye must not use the sun-baked sand. It's the sea sand does the trick.
And he showed her how to dig for the wet sand below. Thank, but Swashby was gone. Before long, amazing sculptures decorated the beach.
It's the clamshells ye should be using, Swashby called from inside.
Come play, Mr. Swashby, the girl called back.
Swashbys don't play, he answered, banging the shutters.
So the sea decided to meddle more than just a little. She inched her way up the sand and tickled the girl's toes. She nibbled on the sculptures and slurped away the bucket. The girl tried to grab it, but...
Look at me, the girl called.
Look at her, Granny gasped.
Oh, dear, look at her. Granny hurried to the water's edge, but...
Swashby was already there, saving her. Oh, what are ye up to, ye great salty imp? He asked,
scooping up the girl and the bucket. With a great big wave, the sea delivered the pair back to shore. And there was no stopping the laughing and thanking and hugging. That was Swashby's reward.
Oh, I see what you did, he whispered to the sea,
as he was whisked away to celebrate. After that, it was easy for Swashby to have tea with the girl and her granny, and ice cream and lobster and s'mores on the beach.
It was easy for him to share his special sea glass. It was even easy for him to see that neighbors could be fun, and friends, and family. And when he had a moment to himself, Swashby carved a heartfelt message for the sea. "Thank ye, friend," which the sea fiddled with just a little bit. And it says, "The end." Princess Arabella goes to school. "It's time to go to sleep now, sweetheart," said the queen. But Princess Arabella couldn't sleep. "Tomorrow's a big day," she thought. "I'm finally going to school." The next morning, Princess Arabella packed her bag for school. 2 golden pens, 2 pencils, an eraser, 3 books, a golden pencil sharpener, and, last but not least, her royal lunchbox. "You will be good, won't you?" said the queen. "You will listen to your teacher, won't you?" said the king. But Princess Arabella didn't hear a word they said. She ran into the school as fast as she could. In the classroom, lots of little princesses were bending and bobbing up and down. "It looked like the gym class has already started," thought Princess Arabella. But it wasn't the gym class at all. It was the How to Curtsy with Elegance lesson. And then it was time for How to Walk with Grace. "Noses in the air, girls," called the royal teacher. But Princess Arabella thought the book was far too good to keep on her head. "Never forget to smile as you cut the ribbon," called the royal teacher. And Princess Arabella did exactly as she was told, because she had just cut out a beautiful chain of elephants. The prince's next lesson was math. "Princess Arabella," said the royal teacher, "1 crown plus 1 crown, how many crowns does that make?" Arabella didn't answer. What a silly question. "I don't like school anymore," said the princess, looking sad. "I want to go home." The royal teacher felt a bit sorry for Arabella. "I have an idea," she said. "Let's make tomorrow a special day. Every princess can bring her favorite animal to school with her." And that's what happened. Princess Ling brought her most beautiful butterfly to school. Princess Sophie brought her favorite cat. And Princess Arabella? Princess Arabella took along her favorite little elephant. The royal teacher was amazed to see the elephant. But then she sighed. "Oh, yes, of course," she said. "What could be more fun than having an elephant in the classroom?" Princess Arabella put her hand up in the air as high as she could. "I know, miss, I know," she shouted happily. "2 elephants." Rock what you got. Once upon a blank piece of paper, where anything could happen, an artist picked up a pencil and started to draw. She drew a face and a body and 2 feet. Then she gave her drawing a name, Viva. The artist sighed deeply. Something wasn't quite right, so she decided to erase her drawing and start again. But before she could, Viva grabbed the pencil and tried to stop her. "Excuse me, lady, artist, ma'am, but I like me the way I am. Before you change one line or dot, can I try to rock what I got?" Well, the artist thought, but decided not. What exactly didn't she like? Aha!
It was the hair. Maybe if the hair was different, this drawing could work. So she turned the page and tried changing the hair. But after all the trying, it was still Viva on the page. And she had more to say. Rock what you got, and rock it a lot. Look at what is not, what is not. Find what is yours, and carve out your spot. Take it, and own it, and rock it a lot. The artist thought, but decided not. What exactly didn't she like? Aha, it was the body. Maybe if the body was different, this drawing could work. So she turned the page and tried changing the body. But after all the trying, it was still Viva on the page. And she still had something to say. Everyone has their own special thing. Find what is yours and bring what you bring. Find your own voice and sing how you sing. Find your own oomph. Find your own zing. Be your best you and rock what you got. Don't let anyone say what you're not. Live in this world and make your own spot. Take what you've got and rock it a lot. Well, the artist thought, but decided not. What exactly didn't she like? Aha, it was the background. Maybe if the background was different, this drawing could work. So she turned the page and tried changing the entire background. She drew an enchanted forest with a dazzling palace, wild unicorns, and a handsome prince in full color. But after all that, it was still Viva on the page. And she was still saying that same familiar thing. Rock what you got, and rock it a lot. Don't let anyone say what you're not. Find what is yours, and carve out your spot. Take it, and love it, and rock it a lot. Is there a chance that you forgot? The artist thought, was there a chance that she forgot? There was, because she was the one who had written it a long time ago, when she was just about Viva's age. The artist made herself a promise never to forget again. And she decided Viva was perfect just the way she was, rocking exactly what she had. Then together they turned the page, where anything could happen. And this is just a reminder. My name is Andy Bombeck, and I hope you're enjoying the Children's Story Hour. And as I mentioned at the beginning of today's program, for the second half hour, I'm going to continue reading the novel that I've been reading now for almost 2 months, titled Angus Thongs and Full Frontal Snogging, Confessions of Georgia Nicholson. I am a facsimile of a sham of a fax of a person. Georgia Nicholson's life is far from simple. Her cat, Angus, is the size of a small Labrador. Her 3-year-old sister may have peed somewhere in her room. And her best friend, Jazz, thinks she looks like an alien just because she accidentally shaved off her eyebrows. Enter the sex god. This just might turn out to be the most fabbity fab year ever. Okay, last week, Elizabeth broke up with Mark. She still likes the sex god, and her dad is still considering moving the family to New Zealand. And that's where I left off last week. Friday, December 18th, 7:30 p.m. Jazz off all week. I'm worried about her now. She won't even speak to me on the phone, even when I pretended I was Santa Claus. Friday, December 25th, 2 p.m. Happy St. Nicholas's Day, one and all. My fun-filled day started at 5:15 a.m. when Libby came in to give me my present, something made out of Play-Doh that had horrible, suspicious-looking brown bits in it. She said, "Georgie's baby, ah," and tucked it up into bed with me. As we are a bit strapped for cash, as Vatty put it, due to his inability to hold down a job, in my opinion, but I didn't say it in case I spoiled Christmas even more, we could not have expensive presents. Mom and Dad got me CDs and makeup and leggings and trainers and undies and perfume. And I made Dad a lovely mustache holder that I think he will treasure. I made Mom some homemade cosmetics out of egg yolks and stuff. She tried on the face mask and it gave her a bit of a rash. But on the whole, livened up her complexion. I made Libby a fairy costume, which was a big mistake, as she spent the rest of the day changing us into things by whacking us with her wand. I had to be a nice Porky Piggy for about an hour. I never want to see a sausage again. Jazz phoned, but still isn't venturing out. So no escaping Merry Christmas with my family. Angus looked nice in his tinsel crown until it annoyed him and he ate it. When we had our lunch, Mom made him a special moose-shaped lunch in his bowl out of caddo meat. He ate its head and then sat in it. Heaven knows what goes on in his cat brain. I think I may become a new age person next year and celebrate the winter solstice by leaving my family and going to Stonehenge to dance with druids. It couldn't be more boring than watching my dad trying to make his new electric toothbrush work. However, there was a bright moment when he got tangled up in his mustache. Saturday, December 26th, noon. Quid dommage. M and D have selfishly asked me to babysit Libby while they have a last night out together. Dad leaves for Wangamata on the 29th. Sob, sob. And so, as a brilliant treat, he is taking Mom to the pub with Uncle Eddie. If I was Mom, I would have faked an accident, or, if necessary, had a real accident. A broken ankle would be a small price to pay to avoid Uncle Eddie's version of agadado. 11:30 p.m., Mom and Dad came crashing in, giggling. They were drunk. I was in bed trying to sleep, but they have no consideration. I could hear them dancing around to the birdie song. They are sad. Then they crept upstairs, saying shh, shh, really loudly. Mom gave a bit of a gasp when she came into my room because Libby was in bed with me, but she had gone to sleep upside down, so her feet were on the pillow next to me. Mom put her in her own bed. But then, horror of horrors, Dad ruffled my hair. I pretended even harder to be asleep. Sunday, December 27th, 11 a.m. M and D still in bed. I will take their lovely young daughter, Liberty, in to them to chat. 2 p.m. Going out. Dad's given me a fiver to take Libby with me. Tuesday, December 29th, 8 p.m. Vaddy left today. I must say, even I had a bit of a cry. He went off in Uncle Eddie's sidecar. We all waved him off. He says that he'll ring when he gets to Wangamatata. It takes 2 days to fly there. Imagine that. I suppose it is the other side of the world. Mom is all gloom and sniveling, so I bought her some milk tray. That made her cry more, so I don't think I'll do it again. Libby got her Angus's bowl to cry into. January, exploding knickers. Friday, January the 1st, 11 a.m., resolutions. I will be a much nicer person to people who deserve it. I will be interested in my future. I will speak nicely to Mr. and Mrs. Next Door. I will be less superficial and vain. I will concentrate on my positive and not my negative. E.g., I will think less about my nose and more about my quite attractive teeth. Saturday, January the 2nd, 11:30 a.m. At last, news of Jazz. It seems that she might have glandular fever. I'm wearing a scarf over my mouth and nose when I visit her, just in case. Apparently, you get glandular fever from kissing. It's a nightmare, this kissing business. If it's not a mysterious hand on the breast, it's huge, swollen glands. Celibacy, or a huge, fat neck. That is the stark choice. I wonder if Slim has got big feet from too much kissing in the foot area. Ugh, now I feel really sick. I'm far too ill to visit the sick. I must go home to bed. No, Jazz needs me. I'll just try not to breathe the same air as her. 4 p.m. Jazz has finally let me see her. She's all pale and thin, just lying in bed. Her bedroom is tidy, which is a bad sign, and she has turned her mirror to the wall. She didn't even open her eyes when I came in. I sat on her bed. Jazz, what are you doing? What's the matter? Come on, tell me. Your best pal. Silence. Come on, Jazz. Whatever it is, you can trust me. Silence. I know what it is. You think that just because everyone else besides nauseating P. Green and Harry Kate have got boyfriends or have kissed someone properly, there is something really wrong with you. Don't you? Silence. I was getting a bit irritated. I was trying to help, and I had problems of my own. I was practically an orphan, for instance, and a substitute parent. Mom was all. Will you babysit Libby, since Dad had selfishly gone to the other side of the world? What did Jazz know of trouble? Had she taken her little sister to the swimming pool? No. She didn't even have a little sister. Had her little sister's swimming knickers exploded at the top of the toddler's water slide? No. Is there ever any point in trying to tell Mom that Libby always has bottom trouble after baked beans? No, there is not. The swimming knickers could not contain Libby's poo explosion. And it was all over the slide and nearby toddlers. Did Jazz know what it was to see a pool being cleared of sobbing toddlers, dragged out by their water wings? No. Did she know what it was like to sluice her little sister down and then have to walk the gamut of shame past all the mothers and toddlers and swimming pool attendants in masks with scrubbing brushes? I think not. I had to take it on the chin, like a taking it on the chin person. So why couldn't Jazz? Well, I didn't say any of this to Jazz, but I took a tough line. Come on, Jazz. What can be so bad about swollen up glands?
Jazz spoke in a quiet voice, so I had to bend down to hear her. I haven't got swollen up glands. I don't think I'll ever get a boyfriend. No one asked me to dance, even. Tom was my only chance, and even he preferred his onions.
Ah, time for all that stuff I read in Mom's Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway book. I got Jazz's mirror from the wall and held it in front of her face. Look into that mirror, Jazz, and love the person that you see. Say, I love you.
Jazz looked in the mirror. She couldn't help it. It was about 3 centimeters away from her nose. She was almost sick.
Oh, I look hideous.
She wasn't really getting it. I said, Jazz, love yourself. Love the beauty that is there. Look at that lovely face. Look at that lovely mouth. The mouth that your friend marked 8 out of 10. Think of that, Jazz. Think of all the poor people who only got 6 1/3. And you have an 8 for a mouth.
I can be like an elephant for remembering things that annoy me. Sadly, I can remember nothing to do with French, history, maths, or biology.
Jazz was definitely perking up. She was puckering her mouth and trying for a half smile. Do you really think I have got a nice mouth?
Yes, but look at the rest of you. Look at those eyes. Look at the spot-free skin.
Jazz sat up. I know. It's good, isn't it? I've been drinking lemon and hot water first thing.
Monday, January the 4th. 7 a.m. Woke up and felt happy for a minute until I realized I had to go back to Looney Headquarters School today. 2:30 p.m. Gym. Discovered Angus had stored his afternoon snack in my rucksack. There are hedgehog quills in my sports knickers.
Tuesday, January the 12th, noon. Victory! Madam Slack has been on my case about being lazy in French, and I have just got 85% in a test. Ha, 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 ha. Fermez la bouche. Madam Slack, I did it by learning 25 words and then making sure I answered every question by using only those words. So, to question 1 in French, what is your favorite food? My answer was lapine, rabbit. For my essay, what did you do on a sunny day? I made sure I played with a rabbit.
Describe a favorite book. Watership Down. Lots of lapines in that.
1 p.m. In line with my new resolution to concentrate on school and not boys, I went to do my yoga in the gym at lunchtime. My yoga routine is called the Sun Salute. And you stretch up to welcome the sun, and then you bend down as if to say, I am not worthy. Then you do cobra pose and dog pose. It's all very flowing and soothing. 1:15 p.m. Miss Stamp came in just as I was doing dog pose. She said, oh, don't let me disturb you. I'm glad you're taking an interest in yoga. It's one of the best exercises for the body. It will be really good for your tennis in summer. Don't mind me. I'm just getting ready for this afternoon. Well, I was upside down with my bottom sticking up in the air. Not something you want to do in front of a lesbian. So I quickly went into Cobra, but that made it look like I was sticking my breast out at her. I think she may now be growing a beard as well as a mustache. Honestly, there is no bloody peace in this place. 1:30 p.m. I tried my yoga outside, even though it was hard to do with my gloves and coat on. Again, I just got into dog pose when Elvis appeared round the corner. He's a grumpy old nutcase. "What are you up to?" he shouted at me. I said from upside down, doing yoga. He pulled down his cap. "I don't care if you're doing nuclear physics. You're not doing it in my yard. Clear off before I report you." As I went, I said, "Did you know that Elvis is dead?" 4:30 p.m. Saw Mark on my way home. I smiled in a mature way at him. He just said, "All right." 6 p.m. Mom has gone mental in Vaddy's absence. When I asked Mom if she would pay for my nose reduction surgery, she came out with the old, "We can barely afford to feed Angus" line, as if he needs feeding anyways. There's never a day goes by that I don't find something decomposing in the linen closet. Anyway, she can't afford to invest in the happiness of her daughter, but she can afford to have the living room decorated, apparently because the decorator is coming next week. 9:30 p.m., watching TV, Mom said, "Do you miss your dad?" And I said, "Who?" Monday, January the 18th, biology, 2:40 p.m. "I can do a great impression of a lockjaw germ." Rosie passed me a note. "Dear G, you know we have a double free period on Thursday." "Well, do you fancy bunking off and going downtown?" Rex. 4:30 p.m., walking home with Jazz. I think she is well on the way to recovery. "What do you think of this lip gloss? Do you think it makes me look a bit like Claudia Schiffer? My mouth is the same shape, I think. I wish I hadn't started this. Still, if she wants to live in a fantasy wonderland, and it cheers her up." We went to her house and up to her room. Oh, the bliss of a normal household. No mad mom, no strange sister, no wild animals. Jazz's mom asked if we would like some Rabina and sandwiches. Imagine my mom doing that. Imagine my mom being in. I suppose she is a good role model if you want to be a hospital administrator, but couldn't she make the odd sandwich as well? In Jazz's bedroom, we did our vital statistics with her tape measure. I am 32, 23, 32, and Jazz is 30, 23, 33. I think she was breathing in for the 23 myself. Also, my legs are 2 inches longer than hers. I didn't mention it to Jazz, but one of my legs is 2 inches longer, and the other one is only 1.5 inches longer. How can you develop a limp at my age? It might be because I carry my bag on one shoulder, and it's making that side longer. I must remember to swap sides. Nobody likes a lopsided girl. Thursday, January 28th, 3:30 p.m., double free period. Rosie got up first and left the room. Miss Wilson came in as we were working to supervise, but we asked her who invented God, and she left pretty quickly. We were busy making a list of all the qualities we want in a boyfriend: sense of humor, good dancer, good kisser, nice smile, six-pack, etc. Rosie sent her list, and it just said, "Huge." I wrote back, "Huge what?" And she wrote back, "Huge everything." Then I wrote back, "Huge teeth, you mean?" And she replied, "Yes, Sven has begun to infect her with his Danish, I think." Anyway, Rosie, Jules, and Ellen went out first, and then me and Jazz. We met up in the ground floor loo and put our boots and skinny tops and makeup on. We made sure the coast was clear and then went out of the back doors. We had to crouch down beneath the science block windows. Hawkeye was teaching in there, and she could smell a girl at 20 paces. Once past the science block, it was a quick dash behind Elvis's hut. He was in there, reading his newspaper, and as we crept by, we heard him fart loudly and say, "Pardon." I started giggling, and then everyone caught it. We had to run like mad. All afternoon, if anyone did anything, we'd say, "Pardon." Great in boots. We tried all the testers and this stuff that you put on your hair, like a wand, and it puts a streak of color into your own hair. I tried all of them, but blonde looked really brilliant. Just a streak across the front. I knew it would look good. I'm going to get Mom to let me dye my hair blonde now that Vaddy's safely in Wadamagata. Midnight. Brilliant day. Jazz and I sang Respect by Aretha Franklin on the way home. February. Jazz must die. Saturday, February 6th, 11 a.m. The doorbell rang. Mom was in the loo cleaning up Libby. It was not a pretty sight. All the weekend, Mom wears these awful dungarees that only people from the 60s wear. Libby was singing, "Three Bag Bears, Three Bag Bears, See How They Run, See How They Run, Three Blind Mice," to other people. Libby was as happy as a mad sandbag, but Mom was all flustered. "Will you answer that, Georgie? It will be this builder called Jim." I phoned up to look at the living room. "Let him in and make a cup of coffee while I finish with this." When I opened the door, I got an impression of blonde hair and denims, but then there was this awful squealing from next door's garden. Mr. Next Door was screeching, "Get him! Get him! Oh, oh, oh!" She was dashing around the garden with a broom. I thought that Angus had got the poodle at last. But when I looked over the fence, he had a little brown thing in his mouth. Mrs. Next Door yelled at me, "I'm going to call the police. It's my niece's guinea pig. We're looking after it. And now this thing has got it." Angus crouched down, not very far away. I said in my sternest voice, "Drop it! Now drop it, Angus!" Due to my training, he recognized my voice and let the guinea pig drop out of his mouth. I started to go over to get it, and the guinea pig started scampering away. After it had got a few centimeters, Angus put his huge paw out and just let it rest on the end of its bottom. It squiggled and squiggled, and Angus yawned and took his paw off again. The guinea pig streaked off, and Angus lumbered to his feet and ambled after it. He biffled it onto its back, and then he sat on it and closed his eyes for a little doze. I said to Mrs. Next Door, "Sorry, he can be very annoying. He's having a game with it." She was very unreasonable. I managed to lure Angus away from his little playmate with a kipper. Mrs. ND says she is going to complain to someone official. I wonder who. Cat Patrol, I suppose. Jim had been watching from the doorstep. He had a nice crinkly smile. He said, "Wow, he's big for a cat, isn't he?" I sighed, "Come in. Mom's in the bathroom. She'll be out in a minute." Jam came into the front room, and I gave him some of my coffee. He's quite good-looking for an older man. Mom came rushing in her dungarees. Then she saw Jim and went all weird and even redder. She said, "Not nigh," and then just left the room. I shrugged my shoulders at Jim. He said, Are you doing your GCSEs? Good. He thought I was at least 16. Ha, 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 ha. I went, no, as well. Then Mum came back with lipstick on and proper clothes. I left them to it. Sunday, February 7th, 11 a.m. Got dressed in a short skirt. Then me and Jazz walked up and down to the main road. We wanted to see how many cars with boys in them hooted at us. 10. We had to walk up and down for 4 hours. Still, 10 is 10. Monday, February 22nd, 4:15 p.m. Something really odd happened today when Jazz and I left school. Robbie was at the school gate in his mini. He was leaning against it. I wish my legs didn't go all jellyoid when I see him. How do you make yourself not like someone? I think you're supposed to concentrate on some of their bad points. Maybe he's got horrible hands. I looked at his hands. They're lovely, all strong-looking, but quite artistic, too. Like he could put up a shelf and also take you to a plateau of sensual pleasure at the same time. I bet he doesn't rest his hand on your breast. I wish he would. Shut up! Anyway, I was getting ready to put on my coolest look, and he said, "Hello, Jazz. How are you?" Jazz flushed and said, "Oh, hi, Robbie. Yeah, fine, thanks. And you?" He said, "Cool." And then he said, "Jazz, could I speak to you sometime? Maybe, you would come for a coffee next Wednesday after school?" And Jazz went, yes, fine, see you then." And unfortunately, this is where I'm going to have to stop today because we are out of time. I hope that everyone enjoyed today's program as much as I did. I want to say hi to all the listeners out there, and I want to encourage everyone to tune in next week when I continue with Angus Thongs and Full Frontal Snogging, Confessions of Georgia Nicholson. Until then, I hope everyone has a great day and a fantastic week. So long and take care, everyone. Goodbye.